Dr. Jeffrey Halstead has been Canandaigua's hometown dentist for more than 35 years, offering routine dental care as well as cosmetic dentistry, implants, and dentures by their highly trained and experienced staff. Visit them online at canandaiguadentistry.com or find them on Facebook and Instagram.
Do you want to know what's happening in the Finger Lakes? We do too. We're going in depth with decision makers in the heart of upstate New York to get the answers you need. From the team of FingerLakes1.com, this is Inside the FLX.
Today we are talking with the new sheriff in Yates County. Sheriff Frank Ryan took office in January and he joins us in studio this morning. Sheriff, thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having me. Good morning.
So, take me back. I want to go back to the beginning of your career. Law enforcement. Why did you choose law enforcement?
I think as a kid, I always had a predisposition to want to do it. And as I started doing ride-alongs with local police, and I had an FBI agent that was a family friend, that really kind of sealed it for me that was the path I wanted to take.
What were ride-alongs like in that era? And going back, I would assume you were talking about the I don't want to date you here, late 80s, early 90s, mid 90s, late 80s. Okay. What was a ride along like then?
They were very different then, a lot less restrictive. Really, it was a matter of jumping in a car with somebody, showing up and going out for the day and seeing what the job was like. Wasn't a whole lot of paperwork involved or waivers to sign where there are now.
Yeah. Let's go through the beginning of your career a little bit. Where was your start in law enforcement, and how did that progress to the point where you decided, you know, less than 2 years ago now, that being the sheriff was something you were interested in?
So I started my career with the Yates County Sheriff's Office in 1993 after being unsuccessful finding a job in Rochester. I had tested for the Rochester Police Department and was unable to score high enough to or be selected for a position. So I came home for a summer and took the test for Yates County and started working part-time in the jail and for the Marine Patrol unit. And eventually, by 1995, I had scored successfully on the Road Patrol test and promoted to the Road Patrol then. Once I got on the Road Patrol, I served in many different capacities, field training officer. I really did anything I could to get as much experience as I could. I became a sergeant, then an administrative sergeant, then a first sergeant. My last posting in the office was as the Criminal Investigations Division Lieutenant before running for public office.
That decision, what was that like? I would assume you're talking to your family members, you're talking to your friends. What was the decision process like for you? And what sort of sealed it for you that made you say, yeah, I'm in the right spot now. I want to do this. I want to be the next sheriff.
It was unique in my circumstance because I had had the same boss. Sheriff Spike was the man who hired me. And over the course of the years, I'd kind of figured that I would either retire for him as his employee, or as the years got further on and there was thoughts that maybe he was going to retire, I started thinking, well, you know, I would like to be his successor. So my family and I had planned that, we had talked about it and made the arrangements and put everything in place that should the time come that the sheriff actually did retire, that I would run for office.
I have to ask, what is it like succeeding someone who, one, hired you many years ago, but also had the job for 32 years, one of the longest running sheriffs in the state? What is it like succeeding in an office like that, or succeeding him in an office like that, in a capacity like this?
As I said, it's very unique. The common theme that everybody who's offered guidance and advice has said is it's one of those things where you're going to have to make your own path. And the sheriff, as you said, hired me 30 years ago. So it was when you learn from somebody's mentorship and follow the path that they have done for so many years, and then all of a sudden it comes to the decision that now it's going to be my path. It took a lot to figure out how we were going to work things, what kinds of changes we thought we needed to make within the office to modernize things and move things forward. But It's a lot to think about and continues to be a lot to think about.
I was going to say, wait, that's probably when you're thinking about it, you know, changing 30 plus years worth of process doesn't happen overnight. Probably doesn't happen in weeks or months. It probably happens in years. When you think about the next 4 years, what are some of the top priorities for you when it comes to modernizing, changing? What are your priorities?
So we've maintained a pretty progressive department, especially for our size. A lot of our evidence and electronic equipment that we use is current to trend. The thing that we look forward in the future is to try and continue down that path to increase public services that are available, try and get out more in the public and satisfy the needs that we see in terms of training and bringing programs to the people of the county that really are interested in it, or, you know, like our bike patrol programs. For we have a very large Mennonite community, see a lot of accidents that come in as a result of people not paying attention to the roads and things. So that's one of the things we're focusing on to try and enrich. We do a lot of threat assessment stuff, which we're continually evolving for our schools and for the churches and various businesses within our community. So we'd like to continue down that. But the biggest challenges we're facing right now is the same thing everybody is: recruitment and retention.
Yeah, yeah. You mentioned a couple things that I want to dig into a little more there. First, Mennonite community, Yates County, unfortunately. Just the newsman in me is thinking back over the last 2-3 years and horse and buggy accidents involving vehicles. More common, it seems, in Yates County than in other neighboring counties. How do you, it's educating the public, right? Like, how do you tackle educating the public on sharing the road with horse and buggies, given that it's a tourist area and there is a lot of non-local traffic? When you think about that challenge, how does a department like yours tackle it? How do you go after it?
So really, it's a twofold approach. Part of it is dealing with the Mennonite community and educating them on the rules of the road and trying to provide high visibility clothing for them, vests. We've instituted a program a few years ago called a slow moving vehicle program, which the former sheriff still goes out and teaches today. But really, that's a matter of going out to the Mennonite churches and the schools and speaking with them about the dangers of the road and providing equipment, talking about putting flashing lights on the buggies, things like that. And also on the other side of it, a social media campaign, putting as much out in the public that we can to emphasize that people have to slow down. We have to pay attention to what's happening on the road. We have rural roads that aren't well lit, and it's important to always pay attention to what you're doing when you're behind the wheel.
Yeah. And community policing is, I think, for a lot of folks, it feels like a buzzword. They don't really understand what community policing means. I think a lot of different folks in law enforcement have different ideas about community policing. But you mentioned schools and having a presence there being important. When you think about the recruiting aspect of it and just the engagement, how important is it to have a presence in the schools in Yates County?
Well, I think it's important in that it adds to the security level of the schools, but it also teaches the students that the police are there and they're not just robots or people that are dragging their parents to jail. It's that they can interact with the police and see that there's a human being aspect of that. It's important to develop those relationships with the kids and with the teachers. I also teach at Cuca College, so I try to spread the message while I'm there that there's a body behind the badge. It's not just a uniform, it's a person there, and it's important to build those personal relationships.
Yeah. You mentioned building out threat assessments, being wise to what's going on in the rest of the world, obviously. Yates County, relatively small population, rural community, but you've got a four-year school, you've got Cuca College, you've got two school districts, you've got plenty of churches, you've got a Mennonite community. Sounds like it would be pretty complex work given the varying audiences that you have to be assessing risk and threat for. How do you approach that?
So what we've done, and it's very similar to what other areas do, we've put together a threat assessment team, which involves area stakeholders such as representatives from the school, representatives from social services, representatives from the churches, the police, district attorney's offices. And what that does is it really brings everybody together to have open and candid discussions about what types of things are going on in their particular environments, and it puts it on everybody's radar to try and work for troubleshooting solutions with problems before they become problems.
What do you hear from those stakeholders, those folks in the community, whether it be at college or whether it be at high schools or whether it be churches? What do you hear is the biggest concerns they have when it comes to these potential threats, risks?
Well, a lot of what people cite as being problematic is the mental health situation in our state and in our country, and the exposure to things through social media, bullying, a lot of violence that's portrayed in the media, whether it be on the news or in video games, movies, etc., all of that having an impact on children at a young age to see how they're developing as they grow older.
And I want to transition that right into when you're talking with folks, just anybody who lives in the community, especially while you were campaigning, even though you were running unopposed, you're still campaigning, you're still talking to folks. What do they want? What does the average resident want out of their sheriff's office?
I think what they want is they want a sheriff's office that's approachable. I think that they would like to see the sheriff's office be more public, to be more transparent, to be out working programs within the communities that we serve. And the biggest thing is to know that when they call for help, that somebody's going to respond.
Yeah. Biggest challenge policing in a rural community?
Our biggest challenge is a lot of geographic area with a limited number of patrol. Our staffing right now, we're running a couple of cars short, which makes it difficult to adequately patrol 24 hours a day. We've committed to our communities that we'll have law enforcement on 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Yeah.
So there's always somebody there, but it involves a lot of overtime, and it involves a lot of shift coverage that sometimes is difficult.
Yeah. Does it also involve working with other agencies, state police, things like that, to try and help layer coverage at times?
So we have a village police department in Penyan that covers the village of Penyan. We're not a primary responder in the village. And then there's a state police barracks in Dundee, which covers countywide. So.
Yeah. Drug abuse and then the mental health crisis, you mentioned already an issue, a challenge. What are your deputies seeing, and what are they telling you about the issue on the ground, out in the community?
The issue is that there's a lot of fentanyl and other types of drugs that are being sold or masked as some more common things, and when people are being exposed to these types of drugs, they're not aware of what they're doing when they're doing it, and it's been problematic with, you know, Narcan and the usage of Narcan. Years ago, one or two doses of Narcan would revive somebody. Now sometimes we're using 6, 7, 8 doses. So it's really a matter of trying to educate the public as to what's floating around and what their children are being exposed to in the schools or on the street, or whether traveling to Rochester or Elmira or Syracuse to pick up these things and bring them back. And it's been problematic for us because, you know, with Narcan being out and so readily available now, sometimes we don't find out about people who have overdosed or where the stuff is coming in because they have the tools to you know, correct the problem in their own homes.
How much collaboration is happening through the region, either with neighboring counties or even, you know, like the village of Penyan, their police department, when it comes to some of these drug investigations? And how much more of that is really necessary given the fact that, you know, you mentioned fentanyl being mixed in with a lot of other drugs? Obviously, that stuff is mostly not just coming from within Yates County. It's coming from outside Yates County. How much collaboration is happening there, and how much more needs to happen in the future to really, like, for you guys to be able to wrap your arms all the way around the problem?
Well, I think it really needs to be an all-hands-on-deck approach. We have very good relationships with surrounding counties, with their investigation units and drug units, and it really has to be a collaborative effort with everybody involved, sharing information and working together to try and get to the root of these problems and stop it before it gets to our communities.
Yeah. When it comes to responding to, and I'm asking this because every county is at a different stage, it seems like, in this process of transitioning from having deputies or cops respond to mental health calls. Every county seems to be in a different place right now, where some are having mental health educators go to these calls instead of cops, or cops coming along with them. Where is Yates County in that, and what are you hearing from your deputies about their apprehension about responding to some calls that perhaps aren't just simple types of calls that do have a mental health element?
So we, like many places, have created a 911 diversion program where when a mental health call is received, a dispatcher will go through and make a determination on the threat, if it's this, you know, what the elements are and what the appropriate responding agency should be. And typically what happens is the majority of the time our law enforcement officers are being dispatched, and when they get on scene, they make a determination whether or not there's a need for a transport or if there's a need to do an iPad conversation with a caseworker at the Clifton Springs Hospital. That more often than not is the case. We've equipped every car with cell phones and tablets, and so they can make those communications directly with the healthcare providers to determine whether or not somebody needs to be transported to the hospital. And our crisis intervention team is working with our community health director to make a determination on whether we're going to start to implement a hybrid program where it's a dual dispatch system where a mental health caseworker is dispatched along with law enforcement. So if law enforcement gets on the scene and determines that there's no active threat and it's a safe environment, that the healthcare worker or the caseworker can take over from there.
Yeah. Before we came on, we were talking about connectivity issues in a county like Yates, and you mentioned how challenging and time-consuming it can be to get from point A to point B in a rural county like Yates. Any issues with the connectivity side of things for your officers when you are trying to do these real-time, need-to-be-pretty-quick assessments of situations and communicate information to Clifton Springs or perhaps Soldiers and Sailors, wherever that information may need to go?
Absolutely. There are areas within our county that have very limited cellular coverage, and most of what we do when we communicate with these, like Clifton Springs or the hospital, is all done through the internet. So it's a challenge in some places, absolutely.
Yeah. We can say that, and then we can flip that, and then also say cybercrime is an issue for every community, whether you're rural or not, just because of how connected the world is. What are you guys hearing from? Is it a lot of this phone scams and a lot of the Facebook marketplace type scams, or are there some other trends you're seeing in cybercrime down there?
A lot of it is Facebook or email scams that are coming in, and unfortunately those things tend to target the elderly. So you know, we are very actively trying to deal with our elderly community through Office of the Aging and things like that to try and get the message out with, you know, if you receive this stuff and it's unsolicited, don't click on it, don't answer it. But a lot of the time they're getting phone calls. You know, one of the very common ones a couple of years ago was so-and-so's in jail in Mexico and needs bail money. And, you know, they would get right on the phone thinking it's legitimately their grandchild, and they would Western Union money, and, you know, once it's gone, it's gone. So.
Yeah,
it's a very common problem, but you know, we're hoping that through public service announcements and engaging with, we have an investigator that goes out and talks to like the Lions Club and a couple of different public service organizations that presents on these types of things. So it's a matter of getting out and educating everybody, and we're starting to see that people are calling more and more to tell us about these things before they actually commit to them. So it seems to be working.
Yeah. How challenging is it to have folks come to you with these problems? And frankly, any local law enforcement agency is going to have relatively limited resources to be able to tackle cybercrime, as an example. How frustrating does that get, not only for you guys, but for residents, especially older folks who live in Yates County who are calling and, you know, historically can call the sheriff's office and have a problem solved, you know, in short order?
It's very difficult to explain to people that, you know, once the act is committed, it's committed, and the likelihood of getting a resolution to those types of crimes is not very well, or not very likely. So it's upsetting, and it's difficult to the families, it's difficult to the people who have been victimized. So really it's a matter of trying to get out ahead of it and speak as much as you can in public to try and avoid the problems from happening.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about staffing. You mentioned a couple cars short. What is that equal to in terms of bodies? How many deputies are you actually short right now?
So we're actually short two. We try to run a staff of about 25. So it's an imposition. When you start adding in that people are out with sickness or light duty or these other types of things, really it's a challenge to try and get the full staff. It's not very often over the last 20 years that we've been at full staff. So, it tends to be the midnight shift that gets shorted, which gets covered with overtime and things like that to try and keep cars on the road.
Recruiting or retention? If you had to pick one that's more of a challenge, which is it right now?
I would say recruiting, because you can't retain them if you can't recruit them. We have a pretty good agency with a pretty good staff that seems to like their job and they like where they work, and it's a good community to serve. But getting bodies in the door to start with all the testing and all the requirements that are prerequisite is a difficult challenge.
Yeah. What's the most common why that you hear from folks who maybe consider it but then decide maybe not Yates County?
I would say probably money.
Yeah.
Money is, especially with the younger generation, it's a very important concern of theirs, as it probably should be with the cost of everything in society today.
Certainly.
And if there's a $30,000 or $40,000 pay difference between one place or the other, it's an easy decision for them.
This is something that I've heard from pretty much every leader in law enforcement I've talked to over the last year and a half, and I ask everybody the same question, but I'm curious. Does there need to be some sort of regionality to how sheriff's offices are able to pay deputies? Because it seems like y'all are competing against each other every day, and everybody has the same problem. It seems like some departments maybe do a little better of a job at communicating, but other times it seems not. What do you think, having been in law enforcement for as long as you have, what is a realistic solution to that problem so that, you know, you're not competing with Schuyler County and Ontario County and Seneca County?
Well, I think it's a difficult problem, and the way we have to address it is to look at the options that are outside for us, whether it be hours that we work, how many days a week we work, what kind of equipment we're able to provide to try and offset some of the issues with the money. Obviously, we have cost of living differences in different areas where we go, but many police departments and sheriff's departments now have eliminated or eased on the restrictions with residency requirements. So somebody could live in Yates County and work in Ontario County or Schuyler County or Seneca County. And we all use the same police academy. So we're all sending recruits to work together and to communicate with each other while they're there. So it really is it just a matter of trying to do the best we can with the tools that we have.
Yeah. When it comes to retention, mental health of folks who work in law enforcement has become a big storyline, a big concern over the last 5, 6, 7, 8 years. What do you see when it comes to mental health of your deputies? And even yourself, like what are some of the things that have helped you be able to stay fresh and stay grounded in the work that you're doing every day?
The biggest thing we try and tell people is you've got to have a life outside of law enforcement. If you're living, breathing, and sleeping police work, it makes it very difficult to decompress. You've got to have hobbies outside. You've got to have social interactions that are outside of law enforcement just to bring that de-escalation and get yourself back to normal and back to refreshed when you come back to work.
Yeah.
So it's there's a big concern for mental health, not only in the public, but also in law enforcement. And the State Sheriff Association is working on a wellness program for the sheriff's camp, which is located in our county, which will be pretty exciting to see if that can come to fruition or not. But that'll be something that'll give people a place to go to just get away, decompress, and have the ability to work through any issues that they may be coming up with.
Yeah. When you look to Albany, and you see the various things that have come up and gone over the last 4, 5, 6 years. What's one of the biggest challenges that your department and departments of your size are dealing with that are a direct result of action in Albany that you would like to see hopefully changed this legislative cycle?
Well, I think with our agency, like every other agency in the area, bail reform is a big issue. Raise the age has changed the way that we have to deal with juvenile offenders. And, basically a lot of the restrictions for the jails has caused problems with retention, with who we can house, when we can house them, where they have to go. So there's a lot of things that have come down that are starting to evolve, but they were very troublesome for us in the beginning. But they're working on the issues that have come up, and they're trying to change them. So
I was going to say, it seems like the more conversation I have with folks in law enforcement, it seems like there's at least a belief that Albany kind of may have seen some of the issues that were created 3, 4, 5 cycles ago, and there's a willingness or at least an interest to work on them. Does that sort of match up with what you're hearing from folks in Albany too?
Yeah, I believe that there's been a realization that some of the stuff that has come out, which may be effective in New York City, might not necessarily be effective in Western New York or Central New York or the Finger Lakes region. So I think there's an openness and a willingness to communicate and work on those issues now, where maybe when it was first conceived, it wasn't so open.
Reoffending. How much of an issue is that, or what does that issue look like in a county like Yates?
In our community, it's fairly small, so we don't see a huge issue with reoffenders. Typically, our prosecutors are very aggressive when it comes to crimes that are committed in our communities, and especially the more serious ones. The district attorney's office is very effective at prosecuting those cases. So I think there's an understanding that if somebody commits a crime in Yates County, that there's going to be a prosecution to it, where you know, it might get a ticket, or you might get the case disposed or ACD'd or whatever the case is. So
just an anecdotal observation from my point of view, we get all of the press releases from all of the law enforcement agencies across the Finger Lakes region, and it seems like there is more failure to appear coming across in those than before some of these changes happened. Does that marry up to the trend that you guys are actually seeing on the ground?
It does. The issue with a lot of the offenses that we used to take into custody and immediately arraign versus issuing appearance tickets now has become an issue with people not appearing when they should based on the circumstances or for whatever reason, and the courts having to track them down and go through the process. So we have seen an uptick in that, yes.
And that's because they just aren't being arraigned right as they're arrested like they were before.
Well, the arraignment and the bail issue, you know, obviously bail is to secure somebody's reappearance in court.
Yeah.
And without those requirements, sometimes there's not a seriousness on the offender's part to return to court.
Right. Last question here for you. Trust in law enforcement, something that obviously everybody wants. Everybody who works in law enforcement wants to be a trusted part of the community. What does trust in law enforcement mean to you? And when you look ahead to the next 4 years, what do you want the community to know about the Yates County Sheriff's Office, that they will be there for them and things are going to continue to improve over the years?
Well, we've instituted an open door policy. I encourage, you know, the public that we serve, that if they have questions or if they have concerns, that they should reach out to us and talk to us. I firmly believe that the community has to be a trusted partner with law enforcement both ways to be effective and to adequately serve the people that we work for.
Sheriff, thanks for the time today.
Thank you very much for having me.
Hey, that's going to do it for this edition of Inside the FLX. For more, check us out on YouTube, Spotify, or wherever you get podcasts. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.